From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. California is the Golden State, and it has a glitzy, golden governor. When superstar and action movie titan Arnold Schwarzenegger stormed Sacramento's governor's mansion in 2003, he came in guns blazing. He vowed to terminate political gridlock, to terminate the state's budget woes, to terminate the power of California's special interests. Now, those interests are fighting back. The former Mr. Universe has a fight on his hands with big-time unions, with tough-as-nails California Democrats, and with a lot of Californians. But Sacramento's most famous muscle man is still thinking big and acting bold. Tonight, he's walking off the set of political negotiation to take controversial reforms direct to the people of California, to have them vote on his agenda just as they voted him into office. It's a gutsy gamble, one that could deep-six Schwarzenegger's political career or pump up the power of the governator's national ambitions. As one California newspaper put it today, Arnold is swinging for the fences. Tonight on Point, weighing Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's political muscle from California to the national stage. You can join the conversation tonight. Have you kept up with the Hollywood action hero who has taken the helm of America's most populous state? And does Arnold Schwarzenegger pull you in or send you running? Does America need more Arnold-style leadership? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, just minutes ago, Governor Schwarzenegger gave a televised address to Californians on his decision to hold a state referendum on key elements of his stalled agenda, and we'll hear from the governor himself in a few minutes. But first, we go to Sacramento and David Drucker, political reporter for the Los Angeles Daily News, to set the stage. David, thanks for joining us tonight.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So Governor Schwarzenegger is taking a big step today, and it is to put elements of his agenda on a state budget referendum or initiative. Describe what he's pushing for and why.
Well, the governor believes that the labor unions, Democratic lawmakers that are currently in office are the ones that create California's budget problems and other problems over the past few years, and he therefore said he doesn't believe they can fix it. Therefore, he is going ahead with a special election, and on the ballot is one measure that would overhaul the budget process. It would give the governor more power to cut spending in the middle of a budget year unilaterally if expenditures outpace revenues. You have a redistricting measure, which, interestingly enough, is supported by a number of progressive-minded political organizations like Common Cause, and that would take the power to draw congressional and legislative district lines away from the legislature and give it to a panel of retired judges.
Right.
And then finally, he is pushing ahead with a reform that many people say doesn't really warrant a special election because it's not dramatic enough, but it would lengthen the number of years required for public school teachers to achieve the tenured status that makes it difficult to fire them. It would increase that from 2 years to 5 years.
In other words, new teachers would have to work for 5 years before they got that tenure that every teacher aims for.
Correct. Correct, and we're talking K through 12. We're not talking university professors and all that goes with tenure there. We're talking kindergarten through 12th grade.
Now, the governor's just given this address to Californians. We hope to hear it in a minute. We're just trying to pull it down now. Any surprises in what Governor Schwarzenegger laid out tonight?
No, I mean, I read his remarks and I listened to them, and from what I can tell, it was pretty actually tame compared to what I actually expected him to say. What I found interesting is he didn't really push for his three particular measures within his statement. What he did was justify the need to call a special election as opposed to waiting until June 2006, which is a year away and when California's next regularly scheduled statewide election is scheduled to be held. And I think he was responding to criticism from Democrats and from recent public opinion polls here in California that show that people don't think we should be holding a special election, especially because it's projected to cost. Well, if you talk to Democrats, it's going to cost $80 million. If you talk to the Secretary of State of California, who's a Republican, he says it'll cost $45 million because so many communities are already scheduled to hold elections, and therefore they're already spending the money.
We're going to look at the details of what Arnold Schwarzenegger is trying to do there, how people are responding to it, a great range of responses. But give us a sense of how his time as governor has gone so far, David Drucker. He clearly seemed to love campaigning. When he was on center stage at the Republican National Convention in New York, he seemed to be very much in his element, just lapping it up. But how has the actual job of governor suited Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Well, if you ask him, he'll tell you he loves it. And when he says that, and I watch him say it, not that I'm a psychologist or a mind reader, but I tend to believe him. Here's a man who has made enough money that he really doesn't want for anything else, and he says that he really enjoys the job of being governor. He enjoys public service. So even if you don't agree with the policies that he's pushing and think that they're bad policies, here's a man that enjoys being governor. That's not to say he doesn't enjoy campaigning. Here's a man, I think, who relishes a fight, who loves to be counted out, and who loves for people to underestimate him. And I think that he is looking forward to the special election campaign. And I think one of the reasons he decided to go ahead with the special election and to go ahead with this initiative process is because he enjoys it. And it doesn't bother him in the least about calling another election and having, you know, what's going to be California's third year in a row with a statewide election. So he clearly enjoys doing this. On the flip side, if you talk to members of his staff and if you just ask him, he loves being governor. He loves governing, and he loves, you know, making the decisions that are required of governors.
And it must not hurt that this will put him back out on the hustings just a year in advance of when he stands for re-election, right, 2006?
That is correct. And many people out here say that if he loses in the special election, if he doesn't at least win two out of the three initiatives for a 2-1 victory, then it's going to make a re-election difficult. But he's a gambler. And so I don't really think he's worried about that.
And if he does win big this time, as he goes into that re-election season for California governor next year, do you feel national ambitions in this man?
Well, I think he has national ambitions, but, you know, he cannot run for president because the Constitution does not allow him to. And, I mean, quite frankly, looking at the history of constitutional amendments, I'd be surprised if the Constitution is amended in time for him to run for president within his lifetime, if it's ever amended in that particular manner at all. But aside from that, you are correct. The man has national ambitions. He likes attention. He likes being out on the stump, and that's one of the reasons he was campaigning for the president, and he was center stage at the Republican convention in New York last year.
David Drucker with the Los Angeles Daily News. Please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation, also from Los Angeles, Lawrence Lamer. He's a historian and writer, author of the new biography, Fantastic, The Life of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Lawrence Lamer, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So we'll look at the details of what Arnold Schwarzenegger is trying to push through this fall, but how about Arnold as governor? Is he, you've looked at his entire life, is he taking on this role as you would have expected?
Well, I mean, people thought he would be kind of Jesse Ventura, a lot of his critics at the beginning. He's definitely not that. He was his first year was an amazingly astute politician. He put through a workers' compensation reform that was very much needed. He turned that into a popular issue. He was very strong on environmental issues. I mean, he's a physical conservative, but he's progressive on most of the social issues, and he pushed those issues. His first was a big success. The problem is the second year, 2005, which he wanted to make the year of reform, that he would make such dramatic improvements in California that Americans across the country would embrace him and see him as a future president.
And now that's been that's hit kind of a stumbling block. A, do you think he can pull it out? And B, why does he have presidential ambitions with the Constitution, if he does, with the Constitution sitting between him and that office?
Well, how could a man with a minimal abilities as an actor and a ridiculous name think he could become the biggest movie star in the world? So that's just the nature of this man. Yes, it's highly unlikely. His problem has been he has a hopelessly mediocre staff. There's no one. There's no Carol Hughes. There's no Ted Sorensen. There's no one of the caliber that he needs. His State of the State speech was really a disaster. Almost every measure that he put forth, he had to rescind or he had to change. And the Democrats and the public employees union have taken advantage of some of his weaknesses. His weakness for rhetoric. In December, he appeared before a group of women, and there were some protesters, and he said, "I'm going to kick your butts." Well, these happen to be nurses, and you don't want to make enemies of nurses as your enemies, and that's what he did. And so he has been finessed brilliantly by the Democrats.
David Drucker, how about that? Finessed by the Democrats? Does he proven that he's got the political chops to work in these waters, or is this a sign of desperation going to the initiative vote in November?
No, well, I don't think it was a sign of desperation. I mean, I think what you're dealing with here in California is a fundamental disagreement. You know, last year when the governor was able to get workers' compensation reform through, there was a fundamental agreement that there was a problem. And so although both sides, you know, had issues and they may have disagreed on what the fix should be, they agreed there should be a fix. What you're dealing with here in terms of budget and redistricting and education is a fundamental disagreement that a problem even exists. And so there's very little incentive for his opponents, who have very fundamental opinions of good conscience of their own of why they don't want to change things. They just don't think there's a problem, and they especially don't like what he wants to do. They therefore don't have the incentive to come forward and work with him as they did last year when they agreed that there was a problem. I think Mr. Leamer is correct in that the initiatives that the governor put forth this year ended up, at least a few of them, with some horrible drafting errors that you cannot have when you're going to push through a constitutional amendment. I mean, this is not a law that you can come back and adjust. And he left the door open for his opponents, who were going to be opposed to him anyway. He gave them ammunition to come after him with. I would only disagree with him a little in the rhetoric. I think the governor's occasional over-the-top rhetoric, although it has maybe made things a little bit difficult for him, I think that's, in fact, why people like him so much, those that do, is that he tends to say what a normal person would say about other politicians or other political activists. And I think in the end, that's really a strength rather than a weakness. But I would definitely agree that there were some poor mistakes and unnecessary mistakes with these initiatives that made it easier for him to be demonized by his opponents.
And yet he's still sitting there at the top. And tonight he's pushing a new measures. David Drucker with the LA Daily News, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Lawrence Lamer, stand by. We're talking about Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Join us, 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, his hot tenure in California, and his political profile to the nation. You can join us tonight. Does Arnold draw you in or send you running? And were you drawn to the man in the limelight at the Republican National Convention? Do you see a national future for Schwarzenegger? What? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined tonight from Los Angeles by Lawrence Lamer. He's author of the new biography, Fantastic, The Life of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And right now we're joined from Sacramento, California, by Peter Schrag, columnist for the Sacramento Bee, author of Paradise Lost, California's Experience, America's Future. Peter Schrag, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure, Tom.
So tell us, how has Arnold Schwarzenegger emerged here? He was famously presented as the Republican who was, yes, the fiscal conservative, but the social progressive. Has he stayed true to that profile?
Yes, he has. And I think everything last year was all sweetness and light, and he made deals with the various interest groups and seemed to get through the year fairly successfully. And this year, he launched he started with a very new tone, which was much more combative, and which has led to this special election.
And what do you attribute that new tone to? Why has Arnold come out swinging?
That's a very good question, and I don't have a real answer. The closest answer, I have two possible candidates here. One is that Schwarzenegger was criticized in some circles for being too accommodating, for not confronting the tough choices last year, and essentially at some level being called not in so many words a wimp, which is the last thing Arnold wants to be called. And the second is the possibility that political consultants who would stand to make tons of money on a special election reinforced that sense and said, Arnold, you can't do this. The only way you're going to achieve your agenda is by a special election.
Peter, I know that polls are notoriously unreliable, but what do they show about his standing with California voters, with Californians?
Well, his poll numbers have gone down. His approval ratings have gone down a considerable amount. He was at around 60% approval at the end of last year, and even higher a few months before that, around 69%. The last poll by the Public Policy Institute of California, which is generally considered very reliable, has his approval ratings at about 40%.
Lawrence Lamer, how does a man like Arnold Schwarzenegger respond to those falling poll numbers? I mean, here's a guy who's watched box office for years. He's very attuned to numbers and his popularity. How do you draw a line between that and him coming out swinging, or him coming out with his bold initiative on the November vote?
Well, I think you have to go back to his past and see he used publicity as his vehicle to achieve success. And the quickest way to achieve publicity, as he saw it, was to court controversy. And when he was a young bodybuilder, he'd just come to the United States. Imagine, he called other American bodybuilders cowards. Well, that got him a lot of publicity. When he was a young actor, he picked a fight with Sylvester Stallone. He just made fun of him. You just don't do that. When he made the film documentary Pumping Iron, he said that pumping is better than coming, just to create a controversy. So he likes a fight. His problem is he's picked the wrong fight, and he's picked... In other words, for example, with the unions, with the teachers and the firefighters, he from day one he should have said, you know, I'm for the firefighters, I'm for the teachers, I'm for the cops, but I'm opposed to their unions. So he didn't break that down soon enough. Now he's quick to make that distinction. He didn't make it then. So he's created too much controversy for himself. And again, the Democrats and the public employees unions have brilliantly exploited this, bringing out these masses of protesters. And what are they protesting? The change in the pension plan that was going to change it from a defined benefit to 401k, not for those workers, not for those cops and firefighters, but for the future generation. Usually people come out to protest war and death, major war and peace, major issues.
Yeah.
Not this, but it was just used against him, and that's one of the primary reasons his polls have gone down.
And, of course, his political opposition has become pretty tough. Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez of Los Angeles saying, I know the governor is not a right-wing nut, but he's certainly starting to act like one. Peter Schrag, I wish you'd take us into these three elements of the initiative. I mean, they look in a way like this moderate Republican profile, making teachers work 5 years instead of two for tenure. Teachers would hate it, but you can imagine a lot of the public saying, well, that's not so long for lifetime tenure. Having retired judges, nonpartisan as described anyway, draw redistricting lines. We've seen what happens when it's in the hands of politicians. That hasn't looked so great. And even the cap on spending looks like something that, you know, Americans like leaders who say, I will not allow this to get out of hand. How do you interpret that he's picked these three things to push on?
Well, actually, those are sort of the residual things. His original agenda was broader. He did have the pension reform as Mr. Lemur said, and that was in their haste to draft it. There were some mistakes, some drafting mistakes, which is what got the cops and the firefighters really agitated, because there was an argument made, at least, and it was debatable about whether it would in fact also take away their death benefits for them and their families. So the governor withdrew the pension thing. He had originally also said he wanted merit pay for teachers, but that kind of ran afoul of the drafting process. That actually was never thought out very much. So the merit pay thing was dropped. So what we have now, in the list that you just mentioned,
yes,
is what's left of the original agenda. Of the two, the redistricting thing, voters have never been terribly interested in it, and I don't think it's hugely controversial. But it's not of great interest and doesn't seem to rise, for many reasons, to a special election issue. The teacher tenure thing certainly does not. So the only one is this budget thing, which is very complicated, very convoluted, particularly given California's already convoluted fiscal system. So, and that's the one that obviously is what he calls a special interest, particularly the education lobby, is most upset about. There's one other measure that's going on the ballot that Arnold has not endorsed but may yet endorse, which is the so-called paycheck protection thing, which would require public sector unions to have the consent of every one of their members before they could use that member's any part of that member's dues for political purposes.
Which those unions would hate.
A similar measure was on the ballot in 1998. It was narrowly defeated with the input of huge amounts of union money, both from the state and nationally. And that one, I think, is an issue that has great national implications, because if it succeeds, if it passes in California, it would obviously open the door to similar efforts in other states. And this one is going to be a huge fight between corporations and business interests and the unions, and Arnold has not officially taken a position, but he is kind of looked at it fairly favorably.
There's also another issue I think is going on the ballot that would require underage teenagers to get to notify their parents before an abortion.
That's correct, and that one is totally fortuitous. It just happened to be there, and it's one that will very likely generate and maybe overwhelm all the others in terms of the public interest, because that one is a hot-button issue.
But Schwarzenegger has traditionally not been opposed to abortion.
No, that's right, and he may, and obviously he's not taking a position on that. He may not. I think if he does, it would. I don't know where he's where he would go. I can't predict that. But he may simply not take a position on that. It has nothing to do with his agenda or anybody else's. There are also a couple of others that are going on the likely to go on the ballot, which are being. One is about the prices of drugs, and there are actually two competing initiatives. One sponsored by the pharmaceutical industry. One sponsored by the Alliance of Consumers and Labor. They're opposing Arnold's agenda that would make it much easier for consumers to get lower-priced drugs. And then there's one that would essentially re-regulate electricity in California, and that one, that has a long history here in California, too. We sort of semi-restructured the electricity market back in 1996. It turned into a disaster, as you may recall. So there's outside of the arena, of the official arena, and for months now, we've had what some people call the game of initiative chicken, which essentially means that one group is threatening the other group with running something on the ballot, costing them a lot of money, and essentially hoping to get some kind of deal in return for them not running these things. And the quid pro quo for the deal would be that the other side doesn't put any money into Arnold's initiatives.
And, of course, everything California touches resonates nationally one way or another. Peter Schrag, Lawrence Lamer, I want to turn to our callers. Chuck is calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I think this is a great show. I'm the kind of guy who belongs to one of the classic liberal peace churches and everything like that, but I'm really intrigued by Arnold because I'm one of these guys who's a fiscal conservative, but more liberal on things like same-sex marriage and abortion, some of the other hot-button issues. So I'm really kind of hoping that some of some of what Arnold's doing catches in, comes down here to the heartland after a few years with along with the fashion trends.
Chuck, can you see him one way or another at the helm of the Republican Party, or would that be a comfortable home for him given his social positions?
Well, I think that would really depend on the Republican Party, and the Republican Party is a lot further to the right than it was 15, 20 years ago or before Reagan. And I think that if the Republican Party leadership could see that Arnold had the type of star power to really deliver some results, I think that they'd fall in behind him, because he's a very charismatic individual. I'm a guy that works out too, and I can respect with someone who has the type of discipline and self-denial that he's exhibited over a lifetime.
We've got it. The Peace Church Christian bodybuilder for Arnold in Milwaukee. Chuck, thanks very much for your call. Joining us now from Palo Alto, California, is William Whalen. He's a research fellow at the Hoover Institution from 94 to 99. He was chief speechwriter and director of public affairs for California Governor Pete Wilson. He's also a media consultant for California politicians and political hopefuls. His past clients include Arnold Schwarzenegger. William Whalen, thanks a lot for being with us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me.
So what do you make of how Arnold's doing in California? You've got a national audience tonight. We're not as plugged into the details of California governance, but people are watching this man with interest. How's he doing?
Well, what's interesting about this special election is that this is basically the governor's nuclear option. We've heard that phrase out of Washington all year long, the nuclear option. Republicans call it the constitutional option. But that's what Schwarzenegger did tonight. He let the missiles fly.
That is in going over the heads of the assembly and saying, I'll get these things done without you.
Right, and very much, you know, in the sense of a nuclear option, he didn't have to do this. He could have sat around and tried to negotiate with the legislature, but he came to the conclusion, and I probably agree with him, that it's a dead end. That when you're talking about negotiating, especially budget reform and education reform, he's just not going to get anywhere with the Democratic majority. So he's decided to go over their heads and straight to the voters. And, you know, in politics, and this is especially true in California, I think Peter Schrag will back this up, so many of our elections are foregone conclusions. You know who we're going to vote for president. You know who we're going to vote for Senate most time. We had zero legislative and congressional seats change hands last election. We tend to over-dramatize things as being cliffhangers, but this truly is a great unknown, and it's a great unknown in this sense. We don't know if Schwarzenegger can be able to get his message across versus that of labor, and we also don't know how voters are going to react to going to the polls this time. The last time we had a special election would be recall, October of 2003.
Right.
And the expectation going into it was that it was a real gamble because we just had an election in November 2002. People would be sick and tired of going to vote again 11 months later. Well, the opposite happened. People got turned on by that. They got caught up in the hoopla of it and the kind of the oddity and the quirkiness of it with all those candidates, you know, Arnold and Arianna Huffington,
yep,
and Gary Coleman. This time around, though, you cannot say with any certainty what the turnout's going to be and who's going to turn out, if the left is going to get the better turnout than the right or vice versa.
So I'm looking here at poll numbers that show Californians 2-1, 61-33% opposed to special election, but now it's called, and so we'll have to adjust to reality. Let me get another caller here. Reggie's calling from New York City. Hi, Reggie. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
I'm in New York City, so I don't get to see Arnold all the time. But I did watch his inauguration, and I think something your previous guest said was very important about it's important to who Arnold surrounds himself with.
Mm.
Right after he gave his inauguration speech, he looked a little bit lost, and his wife Maria from the Kennedy clan, lots of political experience,
mm-hmm.
Came over to him, whispered something in his ear, fed him some lines, and he went over and said those lines to the people around him. And I think he's an actor playing a part, just like another noted Republican who's in charge of the country at the moment.
You think George W. Bush is... I mean, we do remember Ronald Reagan. I don't remember George Bush having such a thespian's background.
No, he doesn't, but I still think that someone's feeding him his lines.
Yeah?
I don't think he can manage his lines on his own.
Well, Reggie, let us pick it up with my guest, and thanks for your call. Peter Schrag, how about it? Arnold as dependent on people whispering in his ear.
Well, I don't know whether that's the case. I do think that he's become... And Mr. Whalen may know more about this than I do, that he has become, to some extent, or it looks like he has become, to some extent, the creature of his consultants in the special election, it seems. I'm still puzzled as to why his tone changed so much from last year, where he made deals and where he was made nicety nice with all the people he's now calling special interests and the kind of rhetorical... unnecessary rhetorical attacks on nurses, where he said they're a special interest and they don't like me because I kick their butt, which is a literal quote. So I don't know what happened to cause the new kind of the use of as Mr. Whalen said of the nuclear option. That one is puzzling, and so I don't know which is the real Arlen, and that certainly makes you think that. Somebody's feeding him lines.
Let us pick that up. William Whalen, how about it? Is Arnold Schwarzenegger his own man? Is he making his own decisions? Was he afraid of being called a wimp, and so he's come out tough here? How do you interpret his acting on his own rudder here?
He's his own man. One thing to know about California is when Schwarzenegger came to office in November 2003, he was feared and respected by the legislature. Why? He received almost half the vote in recall, and the legislature was smart enough to realize that if they'd been on the ballot with Gray Davis, they too would have been shown the door. But here we are, it's 20 months after recall, and what does the legislature see now? They see a weaker Schwarzenegger. They see a guy who is struggling in the public debate with nurses and firefighters, as Peter Schrag mentioned. They also see a Schwarzenegger whose poll numbers are down, and perhaps most importantly, they saw Schwarzenegger go around California last November and campaign for legislative Republicans and fail to kick a single Democrat out of office. They don't fear him as much. There is a bill floating around the legislature right now. It's called AB 616.
Mm.
And what that bill would do is it would ban smoking in courtyards of public office buildings. Well, it's targeted at one thing. It's the smoking tent sitting outside the governor's office.
Right.
Schwarzenegger likes to invite people to his smoking tent, as he calls it. They sit down, they smoke stogies, they cut deals. So here you have the legislature on the one hand complaining about not being invited down to his office to go to the tent to work out compromises, and they want to take away the tent. I think Schwarzenegger sort of looks at the situation and realizes that these people need to be taught a lesson.
William Whelan, we've got just half a minute before the break, and I know we have to let you go. How do you see Arnold Schwarzenegger's national ambitions, national headroom, running room?
Well, until he changes the Constitution, he's kind of hemmed in, and that's probably good for California. We have a bad history of governors who get Potomac fever. They fall in love with national office, they run for presidency, and like Napoleon going to Russia, they tend to go to the snows of New Hampshire and die in glorious death.
It's a great image. We can just see him in full barbarian costume. William Whelan, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Lawrence Lamer, author of Fantastic, Peter Schrag with the Sacramento Bee. Please stick with us. We're talking tonight about Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, his hot tenure in California, and his political profile to the nation. You can join us tonight. Does America need Arnold-style leadership beyond California? And what does Schwarzenegger's record as governor of California tell you about this movie star's political potential? How do you see Arnold's politics? Centrist, right, reasonable, radical? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, his hot tenure in California, and his political profile to the nation. We're joined tonight by Schwarzenegger biographer Lawrence Lamer. His new biography is Fantastic, The Life of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and by Peter Schrag. He's a columnist for the Sacramento Bee and author of Paradise Lost, California's Experience, America's Future. Governor Schwarzenegger spoke to his state just at the top of this hour, about 40 minutes ago. We're going to give you a little taste of that right now. Here's a couple of minutes of Governor Schwarzenegger explaining why he wants a special election to push through the several elements we've been talking about this evening. Let's get a taste of the governor speaking to California.
Without reforms, we are destined to relive the past all over again. $22 billion in deficit, higher car taxes, and the threat of bankruptcy. Now, some politicians say the answer is to raise taxes. They say, bring back the car tax, Arnold. Raise the income tax. Get rid of Proposition 13. But I say no. I did not come to Sacramento, and you did not send me here to repeat the mistakes of the past. I know that some people say, Arnold, why not wait until next year? Why have a special election now? But how can we just stand around while our debt grows each year by billions and billions of dollars? If you break your arm, you don't wait until your next physical. You get it fixed now. And that's why I say don't wait until next year or the year after, because every year we are adding billions and billions of dollars in new debt. Now, even if we reach a bipartisan agreement in the legislature to bring about reform, constitutionally, the people still must vote. There must still be an election. People ask also about the costs of the election. Well, do the math. For $1.25 per citizen, you can fix a broken system and save the state billions and billions of dollars. Now remember, this is your money. And that's a fantastic bargain. In my State of the State speech in January, I said that if the legislature did not act on the reforms this year, the people of California would. The people are the ones that wield the power. The people are the ones that can cut through the chains of politics in the past. It is from the people that the democracy gets its strength. And millions of people have signed the petitions to reform the budget, education, and redistricting. Today was decision day, the deadline for a special election this November. With those millions of people who have signed the petitions and standing behind me, the day I signed the proclamation calling for a special election. I still hope that the legislators will join me and that we can go to the ballot together with a bipartisan plan. Because last year, we accomplished so much because we worked together, Republicans and Democrats alike. But one way or another, with the people's help, there will be action this year. With the people's help, there will be reform. Our broken state government will be modernized and revitalized. And you, the people, will be heard.
Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger of California speaking to Californians just about 40 minutes ago, saying that he will have an initiative process to go to a ballot this November. It's been a very controversial step, and one of the great critics of it in California is with us now. Harvey Rosenfield joins us from Santa Monica. He's a prominent consumer advocate, founder of the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights, former staff attorney for Ralph Nader's Public Citizen Congress Watch. Harvey Rosenfield, thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Not at all.
You've said that this makes a mockery of this tool of democracy, that is the initiative process. Why are you so upset with Governor Schwarzenegger on this?
Well, as somebody who's been the author of several initiatives, including Proposition 103, the Insurance Reform Initiative, back in 1988, I look at the initiative process as a very sacred tool of democracy that's been reserved specifically for the use of the people. When the politicians won't reform or won't take action, then the people have the right under the initiative process to go to the ballot. Governor Schwarzenegger has turned this whole process on its head, first by using his constitutional authority as governor to call a special election solely for the purpose of having people vote on his measures, an extra election that's going to cost us about $80 million as taxpayers. Second, by using the initiative process basically to advance his own personal political agenda. He was sent to Sacramento to govern, and that means work with the legislature, pass laws, and enforce the laws through the executive branch. If he wanted to be a proponent of ballot measures, why did he run for governor?
The governor says if you break your arm, you don't wait until your next physical. You get it fixed now.
Yeah, but the problem is that his solutions have nothing to do with urgency. There's nothing in what he's proposed that needs to be voted on at an extra election this November that's going to cost the taxpayers $80 million that couldn't be done in November or in the primary in 2006.
So negotiate, govern, and let it wait. Harvey Rosenfield in Santa Monica, thanks very much for joining us. I want to try to get to a couple callers here. Jim is calling from Hartford, Wisconsin. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Tim. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The point I wanted to make, really, is that Arnold is going to tremendously benefit from the right because of the pro-life initiative that's on that ballot. People that would not necessarily vote for Arnold if he would be able to get for president are going to turn and vote for those initiatives because that really is going to galvanize the right. I think he's actually very shrewd in being able to set this thing up and have a pro-life initiative on there. I think that the left is going to be surprised at how many pro-lifers are going to come out and vote straight down the ticket for what Arnold's asking.
So even though he's not endorsing that, it will be on the ballot, and he knows that very well. Tim, thanks for your call. Peter Schrag, is Tim on to something there? Is Arnold that kind of shrewd manipulator?
I don't think that was the reason for the special election, and I don't think that. I think this thing. I mean,
but he saw it coming. He ended up knowing it would be there alongside his initiative.
Yeah, I'm just not sure how that plays out. It could help a little bit, as the caller said from Wisconsin, about bringing out the right to lifers. It may also bring out a lot of people on the left. It will also confront Arnold with a choice about what he does, about what position he takes. So I think that the difficulty, and as I say, it could overwhelm the rest of his agenda because it will be the hot button issue, and most people in this state or in any state couldn't care less about reapportionment and how it works. So I think this could be as much of a downside for the governor. Certainly not enough of an up so that it would be part of a kind of greater strategy, I wouldn't think.
And Lawrence Lamer, here's your man using that word, fantastic, the title of your book again. He likes the word, and we hear him referring to himself in the third person, bring back the car tax, Arnold. I know some people say, Arnold, why not wait until next year? How do you hear this governor and how he sits in that kind of rhetorical?
I'm glad we just heard these 2 minutes, because we talk about the minutiae of the politics, and we kind of forget sometimes what an extraordinary man this is. And just hearing these 2 minutes, how persuasive he is. He doesn't deal with the details of the issues, but that's Arnold. The reason he was elected governor is when I was talking about his tortured childhood, he said, don't overanalyze that. What I have is this extraordinary quality of joy that few people have, and that's what my life is all about. And he brought that joy and optimism to California at a very depressed time. Now he's dealing with these basic issues about do we raise taxes, how do we change, how to reform. It's extremely hard to reform California. The legislature is totally, it's extreme right-wing and it's left-wing. There's very few people in the middle. When I appeared at the special section of legislature right after he was elected, I couldn't believe it. I walked in there expecting this sort of passionate debate, and these senators, one was the wedding anniversary, it was 10 years ago, he was introducing his wife, the other was introducing a constituent. They are not serious about the issues. It's primarily the moderates who care that will take chances. Yes, he's breaking a lot of eggs. Less. It's also dangerous. If he fails, the Republican Party in California will go back to the right.
Lawrence, we've just got a minute here. I want to ask you, do you see Arnold Schwarzenegger changing the GOP nationally? Do you see him, one way or another, changing the Constitution, knocking on the door of the Oval Office?
In the last half hour, we heard Chuck, this Peace Church ACT bodybuilder, talking about how he's interested in Arnold. I doubt if he's interested in any other politician. Can the Constitution change? No, not if it's seen as a change for Arnold Amendment. In my mind, it should change because if you can go and fight and die in Iraq and you're from Africa or Asia, you sure as heck should be able to become president 30 years from now. And nothing to do with Arnold. And I'd be for it in a minute.
And does Arnold push back the religious right with his more socially liberal positions or not?
He does in a very subtle way. On all the hot social button issues, he's on a liberal side. And the Republicans have made a decision in California that to get that to Sacramento, they're willing to back him. They wouldn't have done it for anybody else.
Lawrence Lamer, author of the new biography, Fantastic, The Life of Arnold Schwarzenegger. We're out of time, but it's been great having you. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And Peter Schrag, columnist for the Sacramento Bee, author of Paradise Lost, California's Experience, America's Future. Thanks a lot for being with us tonight, Peter.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, a rare Senate apology for its long delay on anti-lynching laws. This is On Point. The U.S. Senate took the rare step today of making a formal apology. Between 1880 and 1968, more than 4,700 Americans were killed by mob violence. Nearly three-quarters of those lynched were black. During that same period, nearly 200 anti-lynching bills were introduced in Congress. The Senate, with Southern conservative Democrats wielding the filibuster, never passed any of them. Today, senators passed a resolution apologizing for that history. One of the 61 sponsors of Resolution 39 was Richard Durbin of Illinois. On the Senate floor, he evoked the memory of Emmett Till, a 14-year-old black boy beaten to death by a mob for allegedly whistling at a white woman.
Today, 50 years after Emmett Till's brutal murder, the United States Senate will formally and officially offer its apologies to not just the families of Emmett Till, but the nearly 4,800 other Americans who died at the hands of lynch mobs in our country, in this great nation of America, between 1882 and 1968. We offer our apologies as well to the countless millions of Americans who were forced to live with the fear that they could be the next victim. Emmett Till's cousin, Simeon Wright, was lying next to Emmett the night he was kidnapped and lynched. Simeon Wright is still with us today. Doria Johnson from Evanston, Illinois, also is with us today. Her grandfather, Anthony Crawford, was lynched by a white mob in Abbeville, South Carolina in 1916, beaten, hanged, shot more than 200 times. What kind of offense would merit that kind of punishment? What had Anthony Crawford done? Anthony Crawford in 1916 in South Carolina, a black man, got into an argument with a white man over the price of cottonseed at a store. To them and to all who lost a loved one to lynching, and to those who lost a piece of their own childhood and their own sense of security, we say today, formally and officially, in the United States Senate, that we were wrong. Wrong for failing to protect them. Wrong because we never said we were sorry.
Illinois Senator Dick Durbin speaking earlier today. The Senate's apology was inspired in part by a collection of photographs of lynchings collected in the book Without Sanctuary. Last week, the Chicago Historical Society opened an exhibit based on those photographs. In this radio diary, curator Joy Bivens describes some of the powerful images contained in the exhibit.
There is one of Reuben Stacy, who was a kind of a homeless man who went to a white woman's door to ask for food in Fort Lauderdale, Florida in 1935. And because she screamed, he was accused of assaulting her when he clearly did not commit that crime. And he was hung. There was, from what you can tell in the photograph, there's no torture. But what you see in the image is that there are young children standing around his body with their elders. Those are the images, those are the stories that really affect me, that when you can see that not only is this racial hatred being perpetrated by adults who see themselves as fully having some sort of vested interest in this type of behavior, but when they allow their children to bear witness to another human being's death and therefore validate that it is okay to behave this way, those are the really chilling images. Those are the stories where I find myself being very affected.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
I definitely think that most Americans are not aware of this violence, or if they are aware of it, they've never seen it visualized. And so it's easy for us to say, even though slavery ended, violence against and oppression against African Americans continued after slavery. But the actual physical documentation makes it hard to just say that and really not try to further examine what were the circumstances and the historical context that allowed this type of violence to continue. The way many people are responding to the exhibit is to, I've read statements such as speechless, I didn't know this happened, I can't believe that they actually took pictures. What really shocks them is the fact that the perpetrators recorded or documented the violence, and in many instances seemed very proud of the fact that they were either present or that they were part of the group that murdered another human being. Dr. Martin Luther King said that the law cannot make a man love me, but it can certainly stop him from killing me. And I think that the fact that the government or the Senate today is recognizing that they made a grave error not forcing through some sort of federal anti-lynching legislation to prevent the deaths of thousands of persons is certainly a step in the right direction. Combined with some of the other cases that we see being reopened or more light being shined on what happened to persons like Emmett Till, the four little girls who were murdered in Alabama, Medgar Evers, his murderer was prosecuted not so long ago, I think it's showing that we are at least taking a step forward in recognizing this dark shadow, long dark shadow that racism has cast upon our country.
Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth.
Joy Bivens is curator at the Chicago Historical Society. Its photo exhibit, Without Sanctuary, opened last week. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Then the sudden smell.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.